Med School Uncensored, the comprehensive view of medical training. Welcome to the 236th episode of Admissions Straight Talk, Accepted's podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you show that you both fit in at your target schools and are a standout in the applicant pool. The result? You get a message one day that causes you to jump up and down shouting, "Yes, I'm in!" And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Now, I recently read a book and really wanted to have the author on Admissions Straight Talk. The book, Med School Uncensored, The Insider's Guide to Surviving Admissions, Exams, Residency, and Sleepless Nights in the Call Room, provides a comprehensive view, I could even say an experiential view, of the entire becoming a doctor process. From choosing to become a physician and taking the MCAT, through med school acceptances, rotations, residency specializations, and getting your first position, along with a succinct discussion of the different exams you'll need to take and the hoops you need to jump through along the way. It's all in this book. I don't actually know of any other books that take this kind of long view of the entire process. I think it's very valuable for somebody contemplating medical school. So I highly recommend it to anyone considering a career as a physician. It will give you an overview of what to expect for the next 8 to 10 years or so. Now, let's meet its author, Dr. Richard Benningfield, who is also a cardiothoracic anesthesiologist in Michigan. He has graciously agreed to join me on the podcast today. Dr. Benningfield, welcome to Admissions Straight Talk.
Well, thank you, Linda, and thank you for the wonderful introduction of the book there. That's very well summed it up.
Okay, great. Pleasure to have you. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and where you grew up before you decided to become a doctor? What were you doing?
Sure. I mostly grew up down in the southeastern part of the United States, down in Florida and Georgia. Went to all my grade school, high school stuff down there. I went up to college at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. I considered a variety of careers and majors and so forth. I ultimately landed on computer information systems at the Business School of the University of Michigan. So not exactly the prototypical path to medicine, but, you know, increasingly common to have something outside of the usual biology and so forth. So in that time period, I was working with a small startup technology firm providing internet services back in, I guess that would have been the late 90s when that was more of a magical mystery to companies and users and so forth. So I was involved with that for a couple of years past graduation. And it was really during my senior year of college that I first started thinking about becoming a physician. And as I talk a little bit about in the book, it kind of the first inspiration came when I attended a mini med school function at the University of Michigan, and it kind of sparked the initial interest in it. At the time, I didn't want to completely delay my college process because I didn't really have any of the prerequisites to speak of. So I would have delayed my graduation by at least a year or two. So I graduated, continued working, like I said, in information technology, database design, computer programming, that sort of thing.
That's pretty different.
And, right. Well, you know, with electronic medical records nowadays, it's increasingly becoming less different. But
okay.
You are right. At least it is in theory, anyways. And so I was doing that stuff, and then I went back. While I was working part time, went back to school. Eventually, going back to school full time for about a year to cram through all my science prereqs at the University of Minnesota, because I'd been working in the Twin Cities at that time, and then, you know, from there, it kind of gets back to sort of the normal path where I took the MCAT, I applied to medical schools, went on interviews, and ultimately got accepted and started medical school in 2006.
Well, it sounds like you also developed a love of snow after going from Florida and Georgia to Michigan and Minnesota. Is that correct, too?
Right. Yeah, I definitely. I now, of course, am in I only took it up through med school, but basically from there I did residency in anesthesia in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, at Medical College of Wisconsin. I did cardiothoracic anesthesia fellowship back in Minnesota, and then now I landed in Madison, Wisconsin, where I do work at a private practice group in a community hospital here in Madison. So, I've been in the upper Midwest now for, I think, 20 years or thereabouts, since 19. 97. Mm-hmm. So yeah, basically 20 years.
Yeah, it's like I said, you must have developed at least a tolerance, if not an affection for snow. But okay.
Yeah.
That's a little off topic. You were initially, as you said, a computer science major working on, I guess, websites and database design.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you kind of got bit by the med school bug as a senior in college, if I recall. So
yep. Mm-hmm.
I assume you were working, you were, you know, paying the bills through your work, but what did you do? I mean, like, were you happy in computer design? Did you realize that it wasn't working for you? Like, what was that process like at that point in time?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when you're at that age in your early 20s, it's kind of, I don't know, looking back on it now, I feel like it's amazing to me how, you know, tiny little decisions you make or little things that can happen in your life really can take you completely different directions. I mean, I'm sure, you know, if things had maybe happened some, you know, differently, maybe I would have stayed in the working with computers and done something completely different. I was a combination of, I had done work in college, you know, like a lot of us do, just kind of working in service jobs and things like that. And I'd always enjoyed working with people and chatting with just, you know, a bunch of random people throughout the day. And I was missing that a little bit in my job, working mostly behind a computer desk. And then the combination of just how it all worked out, right? I went to that little seminar and it was like over a 6, 7, 8 week period, something like that. I was exposed to lectures by University of Michigan med school faculty on pathology, physiology, and a bunch of different organ systems and, you know, cardiology, things like that. And I just found myself really fascinated by it. And I increasingly thought, you know, I'd really like to know more about this and about just how the body works, how disease occurs, and, you know, surgical interventions, medical interventions, all of it became increasingly interesting to me. And so with the combination of kind of thinking, you know, I really, a career in which I can on a daily basis work with people from all walks of life and kind of, you know, somewhat intimately get involved in their lives and affect them in a way like that would be really interesting. So I just started researching it more and more. I read about it. It was something I hadn't that much thought about prior to that. You know, I probably had thought about it loosely because I'd always been a good student. So there's always people telling you, like, oh, you should be a doctor, a lawyer, mm-hmm. or whatever. And so, you know, you consider these different options. But I had personally never really been, prior to that point, a pre-med, you know, in all that entails in college, you know, just kind of going through the whole you know, various sort of regimented path of taking these classes and studying for these exams and doing that sort of thing. So I had to kind of caught up to date and learn about all that stuff on the fly. And I wanted to also make sure this is actually something I want to do, because
sure.
It obviously set me back a couple of years in my education of having to go back to school and all that kind of stuff. So I shadowed with a couple of physicians that I was able to reach out to. I did some volunteer work at a hospital. I was involved in some health literacy research at Hennepin County in Minnesota. And I just kind of kept getting myself involved in things as much as my time would allow and kind of get my feet wet, talk to people, see if there was something I really wanted to do. And ultimately, I decided it was. So, you know, the rest from there is kind of history.
Right, right. Okay. Obviously, we were talking a minute ago about what was going on, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago in terms of your thought processes. Let's move forward to writing Med School and Censor. What motivated you to write that?
Sure. I really had the first idea of something like this back in, I guess it would have been about 2010. It was my final year of medical school. I had volunteered to mentor pre-med students at University of Minnesota. And really, this was just an email I got saying, hey, we're looking for volunteers. I responded back. I said, sure. You know, later I got a name of a student. I couldn't tell you who this person was anymore, of course, mm-hmm. but, you know, some student. And we chatted a little bit by email. We finally agreed to meet at a coffee shop on the Twin Cities campus there. And this is actually the introduction of my book. I sort of talk about this, and it's real story. This is how it happened. And, you know, I sit down with this guy you know, he started asking me questions, and I think I was 3 or 4 months from graduating. I'd been through the whole process of med school, at least, which is, you know, about, you know, roughly half of the training process, not quite for some people, but thereabouts. So I kind of expected that there would be questions about, well, what's it like? And, you know, what kind of classes did I take? What kind of experiences that I had in hospitals? I felt like I had, you know, so many crazy experiences working in, you know, downtown psych wards and OB wards and, you know, surgeries and all these kinds of things. And basically all the questions were sort of, variations of how do I get into medical school? And do you think the numbers I currently have are sufficient to get into medical school? In other words, you know, I took an MCAT practice test and I got this. Do you think that's going to be good enough? And like, you know, my essays are this. And yeah, you know, and I finally asked the student, I said, well, you know, I get it. You want to get into medical school. I understand that, you know, but I mean, do you have any sort of questions about what it's like once you actually get in, assuming you do get in, and what do you know about that? You know, and like, do you have family members or physicians or good friends or, you know, what do you know about the nuts and bolts of what it actually means once you do get in? And I kind of got a deer in headlights look and, you know, he thought about it and he said, well, you know, to be honest, I really don't know. And he's like, I don't know anybody aside from this one guy I volunteered with for a little bit and this and that. And he said, I wouldn't even know what questions to ask. I don't really know where to start. And I thought, you know, that's kind of true. And that was part of my own difficulty, I think, coming at it, maybe it was influenced by the fact that I was a little older when I made the decision. You know, I was 22, 23, something like that, as opposed to, you know, like 17. I really thought about it and I was like, man, is this really something I want to do? And if so, what does it involve? You know, what is the process of becoming a physician? And I really tried to understand when I was a pre-med, but it's difficult. It's a very long and involved training process. And even once you're done with training, I mean, it's a career that can very easily consume your life and just, you know, it takes up a lot of time. It certainly isn't, it's not unlike other professions, to be sure. I don't mean to say that it's exclusive, but it's one of those professions that is more than just saying like, you know, I got my archival sciences degree and I'm a librarian at the local middle school. You know, I mean, it's definitely more involved with that than that. Oh, yeah. So I think, you know, in that light, I thought, you know, it'd be really nice if pre-meds that are interested, at least, I know there's going to be some that, you know, they're going to just want to go through it blindly and say, well, I'm committed to this, I'm going to do it. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, everybody's got their own preference. But I figured there were at least probably other students like me and, you know, others out there who really would appreciate perhaps a, like you said in the introduction to this podcast, just a sort of, you know, no holds barred. This is how it is. Point A to point Z, this is what it's like becoming a physician, all the way through the different training steps, getting the first job. And from someone who just finished it, I intentionally, you know, when I finished fellowship and I got my first job, I told my wife, I said, you know, I'm kind of been thinking about, because I told her back when I interviewed that pre-med, I said, you know, gosh, it'd be kind of cool to write a book about explain all this. And then I, you know, I thought about it and I think some people have asked me, they said, well, how did you find time, you know, working as a physician? And part of the thing was I was so used to as a resident of fellowship working 70, 80 hours a week, studying an additional 10 or 20 hours. So when I was finally working in a private practice, kind of normal, a little bit closer to normal hour job, I felt like I just had an abundant amount of time on my hands. You know, it seemed like I didn't know what to do with my time. And my wife was definitely at some points like, oh my gosh, you've been working like crazy hours for 10 years and now you want to write a book. And like, why are you doing this? And, you know, I did it and it thankfully didn't take as long as I thought it would, because it really was just all my experiences. And, you know, it wasn't like I had to do a lot of make-believe or research training. It was just what I'd been through. So it didn't take an extraordinary amount of time. And then, you know, I did dedicate the book to her in exchange for her, you know, graciously letting me pull away and write the book. So, yeah, that's kind of
that was the deal you had, huh? But,
right.
I mean, the book certainly draws extensively on your own experience, but you clearly did look up what is current in terms of, you know, Eros or AMC or, you know.
Yeah.
For sure. It wasn't just what was going on when you were applying.
No, you're right. You're right. The basic, you know, chronology is obviously my experience.
Yeah.
Some of the social aspects of my experience, kind of, you know, the things like, you know, clicks in med school, hookups and breakups and all those types of things, and kind of the general storyline. You're right, though. And that was in part, you know, my publisher, I have to, you know, give my hats off to them. 10 Speed Press, the Penguin Random House, published the book and had an editor and different people that really, you know, they pushed me. They said, well, you know, yeah, this is great, but, you know, your readers are going to want up-to-date information. We want to make sure everything is accurate. So they really forced me to do a lot of research. And you're right, a lot has changed, you know, not the overall gestalt of it, but definitely the details. So yeah, I had to research a lot of that, and it is totally up to date as of, you know, late 2016, early 2017, right before the publication date.
Right. No, that's what I thought. Now I'm curious, did your experience as a non-traditional med student contribute to your writing Med School Uncensored? I mean, I know you pointed to that one conversation you had, but would you, when you were, you know, going to that seminar as a senior at University of Michigan or working in the information technology industry, have liked to have had a book like the one you wrote?
Yeah, and definitely, I kind of alluded to that earlier, that I think, I think not to disparage people who know right away, I think it's amazing people know when they're 15 or something, like, I want to be a physician, and, you know, that's it, and they do it, and I wish I had been that, you know, had that sort of commitment at that age, but I personally didn't. And I do see that in myself when I was back in my early 20s and other people who are in their 20s, 30s, or some I know even in their 40s who have decided to go back to medical school from other careers. And, you know, I would say I had kind of the beginnings of a career, but I do know some people who have legitimate, you know, 20-year careers as engineers or, you know, academics in other fields or whatever before going back. And that's a really big change. It's a big commitment. I almost liken it to the difference between being like 16 in high school and saying, I'm going to date someone versus being 45 with kids and a wife and saying, I want a divorce. And I'm going to marry this person instead. You know, I mean, it's a huge decision.
Oh, yeah.
And so I do kind of feel like sometimes people I see that are non-traditional, they do give it a little bit different of a perspective, and they really think about, you know, different alternatives, and they frequently have other careers or know people in other fields that they can more readily compare it to. And I think sometimes, you know, in writing the book, that did give me the insight that there are a lot of things about our profession that are unusual, you know, and kind of interesting. I think, you know, it's interesting to present it to pre-meds as well as families, parents of pre-meds, and other people that would be interested in the process.
It's true. True. We had on the show a few months ago Dr. Michael Parker. He's an associate dean at Harvard Medical School and the director of a program they have called HMX. And his path is somewhat similar to yours. He got a bachelor's and master's, I think, in electrical engineering and computer science from MIT. He then worked for a few years and then decided he wants to become a doctor. And the HMX program is healthcare related sciences, but taught in a very, very innovative way that in at least the part that I watched, a layperson would understand, or somebody who wants to get a foundation in preparation for pursuing a career in medicine. And I asked him when he was on the show, and he said I was the only person who ever asked him that, did he, as he was designing this HMX program at Harvard, was he considering remembering his own experience when he was deciding or trying to decide if he wanted to leave the career where he had all this investment and training and pursue medicine? And he said, I was the only one who'd ever asked him that. And the answer was definitely yes. So, you know, he designed that program. You wrote this book, and they're not the same, because his program is for people at a particular
point in this process where you're providing this book. And as you said, it could be for family of people considering medicine. It could be for people starting medical school further along, but it does provide what I think of as a longitudinal, comprehensive overview of the whole training process. What do you think, and I mean, you alluded to that one kind of seminal conversation you had, but what do you think pre-meds and med students don't think about enough, or perhaps way too heavily, as they are considering a career as a physician and deciding on specializations?
Yeah, that's a good question. I almost had forgotten, I'd forgotten some of the questions that go through pre-med's minds a little bit in the last few years since I went through residency and fellowship and now practice. And I've been reminded of that in the last few months since the book's come out. I've gone to, you know, done some talks and some book signing events and things like that at different events for pre-meds and med students. And it's reminded me that the focus definitely is different. The questions I get from residents or med students are definitely different than they are from pre-meds. And yeah, I think there's different focuses at each point. I feel like pre-meds in general, you hate to generalize, that's a huge group of people, especially if you go back to, you know, thinking of like in freshman year of college, Gen Chem 1, how many people are pre-med? I mean, it's a massive group of people potentially. But I think I really wish more pre-meds would really try to think about, is medicine something they want to do and why do they want to do it? And I definitely harp on that in the book, that I think the entire process of application, writing your essay, doing your interviews, all that kind of stuff really falls into place more if you truly understand, you know, what is it that specifically is motivating you to want to do this, and go through all of the stuff that you have to do and all the potential sacrifices and uncertainty, because it's a lot. And it's really, it's a very competitive and, you know, time consuming training process that really does suck up your, in most people's cases, the sort of at least physical prime and in many ways, mental prime of your life. You know,
yeah.
I always say that it's like I think the average, age of matriculation now is somewhere, it's like around 25 or so, mid-20s. And, you know, so people start med school, then boom, blink of an eye, they're 35 and they're done, you know, or they're 33 or however long it takes them. And so I think the pre-med focus is so much of just, how do I get in? Can I get in? You know, how do I, like, what classes do I need? It's all the logistics. And I totally understand that because it's not easy. It's very competitive. But I do think I always try to encourage people, step back a little bit and at least devote some of your angst of worrying about getting into medical school and some of that time that you're going to commit to just sitting there running through your mind all your, you know, possible essays and what you can do to increase your GPA and all these types of things. And just sit back and think a little bit about, why do I even want to do this? Who am I doing this for? What do I think it's going to involve? And you know, where do I see this whole thing of becoming a physician fitting into my life, my future relationships, my career, you know, all these types of things? Because it's you don't think about that stuff when you're in your late teens, early 20s, nearly as much as when people come out. Because, I mean, I'm at the point now where all my friends that I met through med school are coming out and they're in their mid-30s and now they're, you know, they're getting into relationships if they're not already. They're having children if they didn't, you know, at some point during training. They're getting houses. They're moving. They're figuring out where they want to go in the country and those types of things, you know. So you really, it all kind of dovetails in and you have to think about it a little bit. And then for, you know, for med students, for them, I feel like med students and residents, once you're in the thick of it, it's always just, it's a struggle. It's very difficult, but try to maintain the relationships that you have outside of medicine as much as you can, because it really will, you know, you'll make some of the closest friends, best friendships of your life. You'll make lifelong friends, to be sure. Everybody has that story of people during med school and residency. But, you know, a lot of people come into med school with significant others or, you know, lifelong friends prior to that process, and it's very easy to lose those. And I talk about it a little bit in the book. I did witness, you know, a number of breakups, divorces, all these types of things. I mean, that certainly is a reality. And that's something to focus on, you know. As far as specialization, I hear even like pre-meds ask me sometimes when I'm talking to students, they'll ask me, oh, why did, you know, what about anesthesia? Why did you come to anesthesia? It's all these different questions. And I think all that's reasonable. But really it's just, you know, your opinion might change 100 times during med school. And that's really one of the great things about medical school, I think, as opposed to some of the other pathways that you can get into a health career, is that it's so broad and you're exposed to at a fairly high level, or I should say, you know, you're very intimately exposed to all the major fields of medicine. I mean, you know, you'll rotate through and be expected to learn and perform quite a lot of virtually every major aspect of medicine. So I think it's great that you can come in with sort of an open slate and figure out what you want to do. Now, unfortunately, you know, with some of the more competitive specialties, you do kind of have to decide earlier and earlier. But you know, you get some exposure to different things. So I always encourage people in specialization, don't get bogged up too much. I mean, people worry about different things. They either worry about, they look at like dollar signs, you know, they just look at a monetary value of like, you know, they'll look at a list of like average compensation of specialties or things like that. Or they'll look at, you know, they'll obsess about the hours or things. Obviously that stuff all matters, but I would say, the reality is it's way more complicated than that. You know, I mean, you can't, different specialties, like 60 hours a week can be divided up many different ways, you know, and I would say 60 hours a week in one specialty is completely different than 60 hours in a different one, and how you're spending that time and those types of things, it all will make huge differences on your quality of life and your enjoyment of your job. And you're going to invest a ton of time of your life that you'll never get back to become a physician and then to specialize in whatever field you pick. And I mean, the best advice is to certainly really learn and understand yourself and what makes you happy in terms of your day-to-day life and your satisfaction and what makes you at the end of the day say, yeah, you know, it was a pretty good day. I enjoyed it. I felt like I did something useful there. Cause if you just focus on saying, oh, you know, that makes the most money or that works the fewest hours or that kind of thing, you stand a very high chance of just being miserable your whole career. So yeah, I'd say think a little more about the big picture on that one.
Okay, that sounds like very, very, very good advice. Now, obviously, the road to becoming a practicing physician is really long, and there are, you know, there's little sleep at certain points. There are difficult experiences that one goes through. There are probably uncomfortable experiences that one goes through. Did you ever think of quitting either before or during medical school?
Yeah. Yeah. I, it's funny you say before medical school, because you know, my wife will still remember this story where I can't remember exactly when it was. I think I was in the middle of the application process. I had already maybe even gone on some interviews and things like that. And in a moment of like, I don't know what, like terror, weakness, whatever you want to call it, I just was kind of like, I don't know if I want to do this. You know, I said, I don't know if this is what I want to do. It just seems so far out. And, you know, before I would even finish this and I went to the bookstore and I said, I don't know, I think I want to do something different. And I bought some sort of LSAT book for law school. And I remember she came over one evening and I was sitting there like taking practice.
She must have freaked. She must have absolutely freaked.
Yeah, I know. She just kind of rolled her eyes like, oh my God. You know, like I think she had already gotten used to my sort of manic kind of jumping around with everything. But, in retrospect, I'm really glad that I stuck through it. Just because even the application process, I mean, I empathize that I don't wish to be back in pre-med shoes at all. I mean, it's even that process is very long and frustrating because you apply to a school and then if you get, you can get secondary applications back and then you have to send in more money and fill out more essays and you're trying to either work or go to college at the same time. You don't have a lot of time and you're filling out all these essays. And you're just like, oh my gosh, you know? And so, yeah, they have this moment. I'd say more, you know, after that point, once I was in medical school, there was no time where I seriously thought about quitting.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and I hate to say this, but I mean, in some parts, because you just, I didn't really, you're kind of have, you're kind of stuck a little bit. And that's why I always, I really hope the book helps people think about, you know, beforehand. Cause I guess the whole gist is there are unhappy physicians out there.
Yeah.
I personally am not one of them. I really enjoy my job. Sometimes sort of the bureaucracy of modern medicine and going to meetings and things and learning about that kind of stuff. I'm like, oh gosh, you know, but the day to day of what I do working in the, you know, with preoperatively with patients and in the operating room and PACU and kind of walking patients through that process, I really enjoy it. I mean, I go to work and I mean, it's early, my early days, but beyond that, I feel like, you know, I come home and most of the time I don't feel like I just went through a sort of grudgy process, and I'm you know, thankful that we're certainly very well compensated for a job that I really enjoy. Like that's like all you can ask for.
That's
but along the way, there are people who, you know, there are people who really, and that's why I say you have to think about it ahead of time. I think there are people that the field of medicine isn't really something that they're, you know, fits with their personalities and is necessarily something that they would even like, but you can get so focused if you're a competitive person or you're doing it for a parental expectation or even just teachers always saying like, oh, you're really good at science, you should be a doctor. I mean, these are, you know, you really need to go beyond that. And cause yeah, once you're in medical school, I mean, to get to your point, the problem is like you're 1 year in, boom, you're already $30,000-$40,000 in debt, you know? And then you can't do anything with that. You know, I mean, if you finish 2 or 3 years of med school and you're six figures debt with half of a medical degree, that unfortunately doesn't really do much for you. And I know people, you know, I know people who went all the way through medical school, some of residency and quit at various points along that time. And that can be, massively, you know, financially devastating for them. So, you know, that's something that,
no, it can't
so, yeah,
be.
I guess in short, I would say I didn't seriously ever think of quitting because you almost can't. I did think at times, did I make the right decision? Mm-hmm. You know,
what triggered that kind of thought?
I can't think of a specific point right now, okay. But I think it's probably, it was times probably when, you know, I was sleep deprived. I had gotten, I mean, there were certainly going to be times where in say, I don't know, like a 60-hour period, you're working on 7 or 8 hours total of sleep and you have 3 or 4 exams that you've just taken and you're still having to go to rotations and all these types of things. And you're studying for step 1 board exam or whatever it is. And you have all these stressors on top of you. And you realize, you know, you sit there and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm only 2 years through med school. And then I've got at least another 3 years of residency if I do family practice, internal medicine or pediatrics, one of the 3-year ones. And then, you know, you're working after that well, you have your specialty boards and all these other exams, and then you're working a pretty intensive career. I mean, most physicians work, you know, 55, 60 hours a week. I mean, being a physician is not typically a 40-hour a week job, you know? And so, you know, I think there was a point where, you know, you see your, and everyone, I think, experiences this at some point when they're in their mid-20s or late-20s and they're going through medical school. And a lot of their friends maybe went into a corporate job or they're an engineer, they're something else, and they're buying their first house. They're maybe married now and they're having a kid. And they're like, oh, my 401k is doing really well. I've saved this amount of money. And you have no savings. You have no house. You're renting some apartment by the med school. You're hemorrhaging cash to pay for your, you know, you're going further and further into debt. And you have no sleep. And all that stuff sort of piles on top. And yeah, there's those moments where it's 3 a.m.
Well, and patients aren't always appreciative.
Well, and that too, for sure. Yeah, you get patients that, you know, are upset that you're doing an exam. They're like, I don't want to talk to the student, whatever, or they're upset about an outcome. Yeah. I mean, they sometimes are venting their own. I mean, you know, because a lot of your patients, obviously, they're patients because they have some sort of issue. I mean, they might have cancer, they might have heart disease, whatever it is, and they're frustrated themselves. So, yeah, it's not like you're working in a job where you're just serving popcorn at the movie theater and everyone's happy to go in and see a show, you know? I mean, hospitals are by and large places people go when they're sick or have problems or things are going on. I mean, you know, labor and delivery wards maybe mostly the exception, but, you know, by and large, yeah, everyone's there because of some issue. So all that stress and everything, there are points in, I think, every physician's career, certainly during the training process, where, yeah, it all piles on and you're watching your friends going out partying or having fun or, you know, making those milestones of life. And you're just like, why did I do this? You know, and it's more like that, I'd say. It's not like for most people anyways, it's not a, oh my gosh, I want to quit. Let me figure out how to do that. It's just that sort of sitting there at 3 a.m. with some kind of a cardiology book in your lap or something, and you have to be at work at 5 the next day, and you're like, you know, why am I doing this? And, you know, right. I think that's healthy. I mean, you'd be a little weird, I think, if you never had an experience like that.
Right.
The hope is that your specialty fits well with you and that you're doing something you really enjoy at the end of the rainbow. I mean, that's, you know, so at the end of the day, I'm happy, but yeah, there's always moments along the way.
Okay. And obviously you are a happy doctor, but there is also a lot of concern about unhappy docs. And so, for example, we interviewed a young resident named Taylor Brauna for our 224th episode. This is exhibit.com/224. And he has a site called The Happy Doc. And it's to, I guess, help physicians in training and physicians be exactly that, happy docs. And there's also talk about nurturing a humanistic approach to medicine. So we've had talks like the relevant shows would be exhibit.com/219, exhibit.com/203, where we explored that topic. We had Dr. Deborah Hornstein on, and she's a member of the humanist society. I think she got an award for humanism in medicine. We had another show with Dr. Amy Ho, who also has she's more public policy oriented, but very committed to seeing the patients as not just a collection of moving parts, but as a human being. And mm-hmm. I think all these people that I've talked to are happy doctors, and you clearly are a happy doctor. What do you kind of keep in mind or do or hold on to maintain that joy in your profession and what you're doing?
Yeah, I would say the only things at this point, because I think I was fairly fortunate that I was exposed to and found, you know, like I said, a specialty I really enjoy. And I found a, you know, I really, at this moment right now, I really enjoy where I work. I did a fellowship in cardiothoracic anesthesia. So I like, you know, being involved in kind of, you know, longer, sort of bigger cases in the operating room where I get to have a little more of a, you know, I'm there with the patient, even though the patient's unconscious most of the time, you know, that's our gig, but I'm there with, you know, one or two patients for, you know, several hours at a time, as opposed to kind of the bulk of my work being kind of quick outpatient procedures. I enjoy both, and I like things about that side of it too. But, you know, I picked a job. I was very kind of deliberate in which job I wanted that, allowed me to kind of focus on, you know, those types of experiences. And so, I mean, I think a lot of it was just very sort of deliberate and careful consideration of the job. And I, you know, cause I interviewed largely by geographic. I wanted to live close to one of my families, either mine or my wife's family, cause we have small children at home, and that's always helpful. And then from there, I looked at, you know, everybody in the areas that it was hiring, and I, you know, it's very easy again. I mean, I know plenty of people who get tempted and they just say, oh, this job is offering X dollars a year and this one's offering X plus 200. I'm going to take that one, even though that one may not fit their desired lifestyle or specific case mix, what they're doing on their job at all. So, I mean, I think that's in a very practical matter when you are actually practicing. Just try to think about the day to day, like, what are you going to be doing? You know, because there's all sorts of, you know, you can be a, I don't know, I'm going to pick something here. I mean, you can be like an ER doc, you know, working in an emergency room, do you want to work in a level one trauma center where you're dealing with gunshot wounds and major motor vehicle accidents and you're getting those big adrenaline rushes all the time? Or do you want to work in a smaller, you know, emergency room where you're seeing more kind of bread and butter cases of people coming in with nothing that's that life threatening on a regular basis? And, you know, I mean, if you're more personality type B and you pick job A, then, you know, that's a mismatch and you're not going to be happy, even if it's the pay or the hours or something, you know, attracted you to one or the other. You have to really like your day to day, I think, otherwise you'll be miserable. From there, I mean, the stuff that irritates me sometimes is more just sort of the, you know, it's the, and thankfully in my specialty, I'm relatively immune to it, but still, I mean, it's, I think an increasing part of medicine that's frustrating physicians is a lot of, you know, just kind of rules that are being sort of top down administered by hospital systems and by clinics and, you know, administrators that aren't necessarily based on science, and they're just kind of, well, this is what you have to do now, and you have to do, or forms, you know, different things with insurance and reimbursements and all these, you know, it's all these kind of details and that practical stuff that you have to deal with it. But if you can find a practice where you can kind of minimize your involvement, or at least, you know, you have at least support from your clinic or your hospital or whatever, and you can kind of just focus on doing what you really want to do, which for most of us is practicing medicine in whatever specialty we choose. Because I think the people that sometimes get the most frustrated are the ones that are there. A lot of the sort of bureaucracy and administrative stuff is getting in the way of them practicing medicine.
Right. Right. For sure. Did anything, or I'm sure there were many things that surprised you along the way, but could you just give us one or two things that surprised you about some of the different phases of your journey, medical school, rotations, residency, or your fellowship?
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'd say medical school, what surprised me? A couple of things surprised me about medical school, and one, and I touch on this a little bit in the book, and mm-hmm. and a comment is that you, many pre-meds will read this on forums and hear this, and the comment is basically the hardest part of becoming a physician is getting into medical school, or the hardest part about medical school is getting in. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's, I don't know where that got started exactly, because I feel like for the vast majority of medical students, that's not at all true. And I mean, there are a few. You know, I knew some, I won't name any names, but man, there's some that I, you know, I met some of the smartest people I've ever met in medical school for sure. And there are some who, even through medical school, with the amount of information that you're having to remember and, you know, go through on exams and all that, it didn't seem to faze them. You know, they would just like they could still sort of adapt that same study strategy where you sort of cram the day before the exam and that's it. You know, for most people that doesn't work, because no. Most people going into medical school, they're accustomed to being top of the class and doing very well and kind of, you know, straight A or close to straight A students and sometimes without a lot of work. You know, I mean, it's something that came, you know, they had to study, but they were never ones that were frequently stressing about school because they're pretty good at it. Otherwise they probably wouldn't have gotten in. But, you know, so that kind of surprised me, I guess, to the degree to which that was true. Cause I mean, I was definitely in that boat that I definitely worked hard, but I never felt like I was that stressed. You know, I always felt in control of my studies and I kind of knew, you know, like, well, this exam, I probably need to study a couple of days before and I can get all that stuff in and I can learn this and that and the other. But in medical school, it very quickly, they just keep opening the faucet and it just keeps coming faster and faster. Yeah. And for most of us, you just start getting pushed back and you can't keep up with it. And so, you know, I thought it was interesting to just witness how different people handle that in different ways. You know, I mean, because it's sort of like the cliche of the, you know, the winner of the beauty pageant in the town of 200 who goes to New York to try to become a famous actress and suddenly realizes, oh, okay, you know, it's that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, I mean, you realize like, oh, everyone here is smart. I'm not necessarily going to be the top of the class. And there's a middle of the class. And in fact, there's a bottom of the class. And, And so I always thought, I don't know, it just kind of was interesting to me to see that, yeah, I mean, there's people that get into medical school who are very smart and struggle, you know. And
they probably never had to study.
Right. And yeah, that sometimes that was it. Sometimes they had to completely sort of retool their study habits and mm-hmm. really get more disciplined about it, you know, because it was, most people can't just say the night before, oh, I'm going to cram for this. I mean, and for most people, there's never a point where you feel comfortable where, you know, you're like, oh, okay, I've studied everything that you know about that portion of world geography. I'm done. You know, let's go to the bar now. I mean, for most people, it's all the way up to the time you're taking it. Like, oh gosh, I wish we had had like two more days, you know, because you just never had the time. And so that was kind of interesting to see how people struggled through. And most people, like I said, ended up doing fine. And I think part of that is because at least in American medical schools, for every person that's very well qualified and gets in, there's another one who just doesn't. And that's mm-hmm. in part just because of the competitive nature of it. There's so many people that want to get in that, you know, you get people rejected all the time who would be very good physicians and good medical students would do
right.
fine.
Right.
And, you know, the thing that surprised me though, with, like I say in the book with the Caribbean medical schools, is that's a different story. I knew people meeting them in residency who went to those schools. And I was really surprised by the attrition rates of those schools and that, you know, it's not uncommon for schools to have 50, 60% attrition rates with people just dropping out. And then, you know, sometimes they don't find out until a year or two in. And that's a different market. That's sort of a whole other topic. Maybe you can talk about that on another podcast, but I'll leave it there. I thought that was an interesting observation though.
I mean, I think that is an interesting observation. It is in your book. You have a lot of interesting observations in your book about the differences between, different types of medical schools. We don't work with a lot of Caribbean school applicants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the major reason is that they're not as competitive. So people come to us when they're applying to competitive schools, basically.
Right, sure. Mm-hmm.
I do know I happen to have a distant relative who went to a Caribbean school and I mm-hmm. think is now doing a surgical residency. So he obviously did fine. But it's not only that there's high attrition within those programs, it's that it's very hard to get a residency and come back.
Yeah.
That's the other part of it.
There's very strong bias and you know, it's very difficult. Yeah. Some of my colleagues who are practicing in my specialty and other specialties I've worked with are you know, went to some of the Caribbean schools and are some very fine physicians. But, you know, those are similar to your relative that you mentioned are kind of the cream of the crop that probably worked the hardest. And, you know, maybe they didn't get in just because of one or two little things that for some reason they couldn't get in here in the States and you know, they otherwise would have been great. But yeah, there's a lot that don't necessarily meet that. And it's, you know, I was talking to med students at these different events I've gone to in the last few months. And I've heard some stories where I was like, oh my gosh, you know, yeah, we're 3 years in and then they fail out or something
Ouch.
Like that. And they're stuck with all the debts and don't have anything that they can do with it, you know? So.
Yeah. Wow. That's a real hard one. Where do you see your career going in the future? Any more books?
I don't know. I mean, you know, this was just sort of an isolated, I wanted to do this. And
kind of it was in you and you had to get it out.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to do it. And I wanted to do it kind of right when I'm done with training, as I said, so that I still had the mindset of a trainee and not now of a staff physician, which, you know, it changes. I mean, you change your whole perspective, but, you know, I did talk, you know, I talked to my editor a little bit about different books because it was kind of a fun process going through writing the book and writing it. And I talked about maybe something, kind of a layman's guide to the process of going to the operating room and what happens. Because I feel like, you know, I hear the same questions over and over from my patients. But
yeah, I can hear that. That'd probably be a really good one.
Yeah, I thought so. My editor wasn't as convinced, but I don't know. I mean, they also kind of wanted me to just wait and just let this book and do, you know, kind of talk about this one, all that. And I said, well, that's fine. And my wife was happy with that. She's like, yeah, you should just take a break, you know. So I don't know. I think there's so much you could write books about. You know, I of course, you know, I always read like Atul Gawande and some of those different physician authors that have written books on you know, that sometimes do touch on patient stories. And I think that's one of the trickiest things. There's so many interesting stories, I think, that you acquire even just going through medical school and finishing residency, much less once you're out practicing. And you know, interesting stories, by which I mean just funny things, ridiculous things that you're like, man, you couldn't even make this up. Or sometimes kind of, you know, and certainly a lot of sad things and things that make you think and sort of think about your own life. And you're like, wow, you know, I can't believe that, I mean, all of that just happened to this patient. And I can't imagine myself in that situation. And sometimes the patients are handling very well. Sometimes they don't. I've seen in an ICU once, you know, a mother who was, you know, she was in her 70s or something, and she was kind of in her final days of life with an end-stage disease, and her two sons, these two brothers, were arguing about something. I don't even remember what, and they literally started having a fist fight in the hallway of the ICU, and we had to call security.
Oh,
you know, there's all these crazy stories, and you know, they'd be very interesting, I think, to put in books. I think sometimes it's always difficult, though, because you obviously, patient privacy and protection of that sort of privileged information that you glean every day interacting with patients. And to me, that's, I think, one of the most interesting and rewarding parts of the job, is that, you know, every day you're almost, it's sort of like being part bartender, you know. I meet these patients.
Maybe barber?
They're there for surgery.
Maybe go back.
Well, same thing, exactly. Yeah. Right. You're that ear, you know. And you know, most of the time we're just down to the details of, oh, you know, we're going to give you these drugs. You're going to feel that. This is going to happen. They ask a couple questions. But, you know, sometimes they open up and they'll really, you know, they'll just sort of divulge a lot of personal information, ask you questions, and you know, you they trust you because you are a physician, and there's a lot of trust there. And so, you know, I feel like if for people who do write books where they talk about some of their experiences as physicians and interacting with patients, I think there's certainly a very, you know, tight line that you have to ride there, and you have to somehow, you know, sort of fictionalized stories or things like that, because yeah, you obviously you can't you forsake that privilege and that trust that patients are having with you. So I think there are tons of interesting things, but it's always a little tricky to me when I start, because I think a lot of them it'd be really nice. The lay readers would get a lot out of sometimes hearing about stories that we go through in healthcare, but you know, so maybe, I don't know. I think if I did anything like that, I would wait, you know, another few years and let kind of a bunch of different experiences meld together. So I can't, you know, I can't really remember any specific patient stories, but they just sort of a conglomerate of things like, hey, this is stuff that's happened and is really interesting and you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But we'll see. There's no specific plans. I mean, I plan on being an anesthesiologist and just continuing to do what I do. And you know, if I, like I say, I've been going to some things trying to promote the book, not because I foresee the books, you know, selling and, you know, so I can quit my job or something like that. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's just, I just would like it to, I think it does offer a lot of valuable information for pre-meds as well as you said, medical students kind of going through the process, because it does, it is, I wrote it in thinking, it's the kind of thing that you could just sort of carry all the way through and kind of go back and reference some stuff as you're going through. It really does kind of touch on the entire process, and it means different things at different points and along your path. And so I would just like to, you know, keep it in print and keep it available. So really that's, at this point, I'm just trying to get the word out and hope that people enjoy the book.
Well, I certainly enjoy the book, and I do feel that the longitudinal view of the process would be very valuable for anybody starting out down this path. So, you know, I definitely endorse it and recommend it. And
well, thank you.
I think we're running out of time, and I know you're a busy doctor, and as we're recording this, it's actually Halloween, so you probably have kids you need to take out.
yep.
Thank you so much for joining me for the show, and thanks for sharing your experience and perspective, which I think is really valuable. Where can listeners find out more about your book and your work?
Oh, I do have a website, and it's pretty simple. It's just the title of the book, medschooluncensored.com. So it's all just one word, nothing between the words, just medschooluncensored.com. And from there, I have a few sample chapters, a little bit about myself, some of the chapters that my editor didn't let me cram into the book that I put up there, and as well as links to purchase the book online. It's available, of course, on all the online retailers and electronic and print formats.
Okay, great. We're going to link to the website and to the book from our show notes at exhibit.com/236. And we'll also probably link to some other both shows and references that I think are relevant. Listener, thank you too for tuning in to this, our 236th episode. If you find this show worthwhile, please make sure you don't miss any others. Subscribe through your favorite podcatcher. We have subscribe links in the show notes at exhibit.com/236. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I'm your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.